Welcome to Anchored in Astrology. I'm Deborah Clement, and experience has shown me that a definite connection exists between the planets and our lives. As an astrologer, my purpose is to help you make the most of your planetary placements and cycles, especially the ones that challenge you. Whether it's your career, relationships, or any other concerns you have, call in, write in, or just listen in and learn how being anchored in astrology can benefit you. Welcome to Anchored in Astrology. I'm your host, Deborah Clement. And, you know, quite a bit has happened since, well, the last time I was live on the air. We've had Uranus has entered Aries. We've had the Aries ingress. And today, Venus is actually entering Pisces. If you'll check my blog, you'll see I have something up about that. And, well, speaking of Pisces, you know, during the past week, Elizabeth Taylor passed away. And yesterday, Chris Fleischer and I delved into her chart as well as her very colorful love life on Turning of the Wheel. We did our monthly He Says, She Says astrology. So if you missed that, you might want to check that out in Chris's archive. Reminder to everyone that on Wednesday, March 30th, Mercury is stationing retrograde. See, it's starting already. And it will be retrograde until April 23rd. If you go to my website, anchoredinastrology.com, I've got a link, Mercury Retrograde, and I've got a lengthy article there, describes, you know, all the benefits, because there really are benefits to Mercury Retrograde as well as the potential pitfalls, and I've got a calendar up there so you can see the shadow period, you know, the post-shadow, as well as the other retrograde periods during the year. And then April 2nd, Mars is joining us in Aries. And we're getting ready for this big Aries stellium. We're going to have a bevy of planets in the sign in April. But Uranus is already there, certainly entered with a bang. And, you know, Uranus is very much about innovation, brilliant, and it is, and of course it rules astrology. And so last year, briefly, Uranus and Jupiter as well were both in the sign of Aries. And at that time, my guest, Eric Myers, released his newest book, Elements and Evolution, The Spiritual Landscape of Astrology. And it is truly a groundbreaking book. Now, Eric, for those of you who may not know him yet, is a counseling astrologer and an author. He's from Asheville, North Carolina, currently. And his background is in transpersonal counseling psychology. And Eric's focus is on how astrology relates to the process of spiritual awakening. Now, he is a graduate of Stephen Forrest's apprenticeship program, and so we do consider him an evolutionary astrologer. But as you're going to find out, he's not the most typical evolutionary astrologer. And so, Eric, I want to welcome you to the show, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Deborah. It's quite an honor. I really appreciate it.
No, it's a great book, and I want to say right off the bat, because I always do read these books, and I read a lot of astrology books. I do check them all out, and I do find things, you know, always find something of value usually in each work, but I have to tell you, your book is a book that's going to stay on my shelf. It is one that I'll reread, and quite frankly, I'm going to incorporate into my work, giving you the credit, of course, but it really is. It really is groundbreaking. And for my listeners, because I know a lot of my listeners practice astrology, some are professional, some just do it, you know, personally, but I really want to encourage you to really to get this book. And if you're a beginner, okay, and it may seem, you know, think, oh, it's not ready, it's very, very well organized. It's very clear. And I think it's a great way for people to learn about the elements because, you know, when we learn about the elements in astrology, and even when I teach it, you know, it tends to be glossed over, but we don't spend a lot of time on it. So your book, I have to tell you, was an eye-opener to me because I thought, oh, my God, look at all of the wealth of information that really is connected to the elements that, quite frankly, I mean, you could have a course on it just on its own. And so really kudos to you. Honestly, wonderful, wonderful book. And we are going to be announcing, after the first break, I will tell everyone now, you're going to have an opportunity to win a free autographed copy of the book from Eric, and I'm going to give the details out after the first break, so have your pen and paper or keyboard ready for the instructions. But I really urge you to buy it, and you can get it directly from Eric's website, which is www.soulvisionconsulting.com. And I will say, it is so nice to buy the book directly from the author, because you've really, there really isn't a lot of money to be made, let me be honest with you, from books when you buy them elsewhere. So it does help to support the author and support the work, and it is well worth the price of the book. So, Eric, I'm thinking, where should I start? And I'm going to mention one more thing. Eric, congratulations, you were interviewed in the Mountain Astrologer, the April-May issue. There was an article on your work, as well as an interview with you. So that's something else. If you subscribe to the magazine or if you pick up a copy, check out Eric's interview as well. It's a great book, and I'm going to ask you, because you're an evolutionary astrologer, but I'm going to say a little bit different. Your perspective, I think, is a little bit different than what most of my listeners think of when they think of evolutionary astrologers. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, well, evolutionary astrology is the basic idea that our souls are growing. And so there's the assumption of reincarnation with evolutionary astrology. But, you know, my view is that there's many different approaches that astrologers take. And just because someone understands that energy recycles and reincarnation doesn't mean we all need to approach the charts in the same way. And so, yes, I've developed my own approach, my own style, and that's pretty consistent throughout my work. And so it's a bit different. And I want to return back to what you were saying before about the elements themselves of being somewhat ignored at times, is that if you look at anything in the astrology system, there's an elemental kind of underpinning. All the planets, signs, and houses go with all the elements, and we tend to forget this. And the other thing that I think has happened is that astrology has become so intellectual that we've lost our embrace of the natural world around us, which is, of course, the four elements, everything that you can interact with. And so my view is that the elements are just so foundational. And my view is that they operate on many different levels. And that gets into great detail in the book. I flesh that all out. But yeah, it's kind of going back to square one.
You know, and that's something when I teach, and that's why when I read the book, it was absolutely fascinating to me. Because one of the things I would stress to my students, especially the beginners, was I wanted them to master the elements, okay, as much as my knowledge of the elements at that point. Because I always feel if you look at a chart and you really have a good grasp of the elements, and I'll say the modalities as well, and you see, particularly when there's an imbalance or, you know, there's all these planets in the same fire or the water houses are strongly occupied, it does tell you a lot about the person. And as I read your book, and this is something I want to just bring out to everyone, it's extremely well written. It's really, like I say, I think it's probably the best written book I have read in years. And you also address aspects. This is not just, you know, fire means this and water, you know, means that. You're going to think of fire, earth, air, and water in a totally different way after you read this book. But you do go into the aspects, not so much, you know, the moon squaring the sun or things like that, but the issue of having your mutable, let's say your mutable water squaring your cardinal, your cardinal earth. And actually, I don't think that makes sense. But, you know, I've pulled out the wrong example. But it's a very detailed. And I wanted to ask you, one of the things that I really found interesting and is you talk about shadow trines. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, well, the basic idea is that nothing in astrology, from a transpersonal viewpoint, nothing in astrology is good or bad. Transpersonal means beyond our personal or egoic preferences. Now, those are relevant at the personal level. You know, you want things to go well in your life. But that's more this egoic preference. At the transpersonal level, we look at what is the spiritual meaning? What is the lessons? What is the soul learning about through everything in the system? And so we relax our judgments and we look at how can we bridge one thing to the next. And with the trine, you know, maybe Virgo to Capricorn, what's the evolutionary possibility there? And what's the pitfall if it's not being handled consciously? If we're not really working it intentionally, what could happen when you integrate, say, you know, in this case, Virgo square Capricorn? So my view is that everything in astrology reveals a program of growth or reveals something that is challenging for us to integrate if we are not coming from growth. And so this idea is that our consciousness animates the astrology rather than astrology dictating to us what is happening. So the shadow trines, just like everything else, has a shadow or a challenge with the gift. And I just, flesh that out for everyone to look at. With this basic idea, with the trine, if things are not, conscious, we could actually reinforce patterns that don't serve us through the trine. I mean, if you think about this, if someone has a struggling moon in their chart and a struggling Pluto in their trine in their chart, the trine's not going to make everything happy-go-lucky and beautiful and whistling down the road. It's going to be a harmonious inner relationship between that moon and that Pluto. And there could be some really, challenging things that occur. And so more conventional astrology says, oh, they're trying, it's wonderful. And from a transpersonal view, maybe not necessarily.
And, I do want to mention again for my listeners, just so they'll understand, that in the book, the shadow trines, as I said, really got my attention because we love, when you read charts and people love to see their trines. They want to hear that they have trines. And I always say we need those squares, we need those oppositions, because the trines, it's wonderful, it's a great flow of energy, but, trines can make us a little bit lazy and we don't accomplish things. And many of my listeners, I know, are very interested in the configurations, the grand trines, the T-squares, the yods. And I want to tell you that Eric delves into them in this book as well. And so I just wanted, that's why it's a little bit misleading, I want to say, that when you hear the word element, it's not just about elements. It is, but elements are involved, as you said earlier, with everything. They influence everything in the chart. And you really, I have to say, you really run the gamut and you really cover every single thing, every part of it.
Yeah, I'll just mention that, for people who might be interested in the book, I mean, basically the first half of the book is looking at what I call cyclical evolution, just mm-hmm. the interrelationship of all the various parts of the system in the cyclical format from Aries to Pisces or stage 1 to 12 and all the interrelationships and all the aspects that happen. And I view it as this wide curriculum of evolutionary growth that emerges. And then the second half of the book is more spiritual, more about the evolution of consciousness and this idea of elemental levels of earth, water, air, and fire levels, which correspond to body, heart, mind, and soul levels of reality that the elements map on pretty precisely there. And then the appendix of the book goes into these complex aspect configurations, the grand trine, the T-square, and several others, the yod, which is fascinating, and then a few other complex aspect configurations that I don't think have been written about anywhere else.
I've never seen them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like the everyone loves the yod, and the quincunx is a main player of the yod. But I looked at the quincunx, and it's like, a quincunx, a trine, and a square make a triangle, and this has not been written about, and my exploration was one of the most fascinating things for the real astro kind of geek or nerd to look at this. Like, wow, there's this triangle that has so much evolutionary importance that is completely unexplored so far.
Well, one of the things that I found very, what I loved about the book and was very informative to me is the work about the quincunx, because there's really not a lot of it out there, even just in general, where it's kind of like, okay, of the minor aspect, it's the major aspect of the minor ones. But I always find them a little bit difficult to interpret, myself, speaking personally. And by the way, I want to tell you, Eric's got a great glossary in the back of the book. So that's why if some of you feel, I might be a little bit more of a beginner, everything is laid out. You can look it all up in the book, so there are any of the terms. And one of the things I also love about the book is you use a lot of, I'm going to say, use a lot of keywords. It's very, right to the point. And when you are talking, you know, about in this, the signs, let's say, and I'm going to just start with Aries only because, you know, it's the first sign. You do discuss it in terms of what is the evolutionary task for these signs? You know, where is their harmony, their tension, their challenge? And you have their advanced growth. And let me just check, I'm skipping one, the peripheral support. But it's really interesting because when I read it, as long, all the years, I mean, I'm practicing, and so I consider myself quite knowledgeable. But I have to tell you, there were things in here that I was like, oh, wow. And I have to admit, at times I thought, wow, I wish I had thought of that. But and I mean, I think it's really one of the most exciting books I've read in years, certainly in astrology. And that's the thing, and I want to stress this. A lot of books come out and they say, you know, it's a new insight. And I'm not saying that some of the books I've read, there haven't been some new insights. This is really a groundbreaking body of work. And I think it's extremely valid. I think it's wonderful that it's come with, I know it was released with Jupiter Uranus in Aries. I think very, very appropriate. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, you also do address the modalities as well. So it's not just, you know, like I say, I want to stress, it's not just fire, earth, air, and water. You know, I think of that commercial, for those of us who are old enough to remember, there was a big campaign for a while. You know, it's not your father's Oldsmobile. And that's how I kind of think of with these elements. I think, wow, you know, it's not the whatever element.
Yeah. Well, I like to add, you know, there is, and I think appropriately so, some necessary skepticism when something new is introduced, especially in a field that is as old as astrology. And people should have that, and I really think that's necessary. And what I want to say about that is that the innovations that I am writing about and that I want to bring to the field, and when you boil them down, they are rooted in the most universal principles that are out there. These aren't just wild speculations. I mean, the charged neutral idea is brand new. I haven't seen this in astrology, and it's basically left and right brain stuff. You know, this is not controversial, having, you know, left and right brain ways of seeing things. But that's not part of astrology because we didn't understand brain hemispheres till relatively recently and in an historical context. That wasn't back, you know, a few thousand years ago. So it wasn't part of astrology. And so bringing in something like that is just, you know, to me, quite obvious. And in my experience, I haven't seen anyone, not one person, who has disagreed with that dichotomy that I bring in. And so many of the other things as well are in a similar way, are just basic, obvious things in nature that just haven't made their way into astrology yet. And that's kind of my interest and my excitement, is how can we look to different ways of understanding? How can we look to science and this wisdom traditions, and what are they all kind of boiling down to? That's the idea of oneness, separating into, you know, into dualism and back to oneness, this overarching, you know, idea that you find everywhere. And so I'm just bringing in things like that are different, but they have broad consensus.
And, you know, I want to add something, because this is what was, as I'm reading the book, as I was reading through it, and you're not reinventing, and that's, you're not reinventing astrology, you're not reinventing the quality, you know, the signs in any way, shape, or form. And that's what it is to me, is that you are expanding upon it, you're certainly enhancing it, and you're just seeing something that, quite frankly, you know, I'll be honest, none of us have seen. When I'm reading, and I'm going to just give an example, you have a section on oppositions, and you'll have Gemini opposite Sagittarius, Cancer opposite Capricorn, etc. And you talk about mutable air opposite mutable fire. And what you say is they both deal with the evolutionary program of learning. And as I, you know, read through these, it makes sense, because that's what I'm saying. You're not reinventing the traits, let me put it this way, the time-honored traits of the sign. But you're just really going beyond it. It is, in using the word transpersonal, to me, I'm just saying, wow, you're really seeing way deeper into the sign. You really are into their elements, into the background. Because when I think of Gemini and Sagittarius, and that's something I always say, to me, I always associate them, well, they're both signs to me of education. They're on the opposite ends, but they're basically both concerned with learning. So I recognize, and I think anyone who reads this book who practices astrology, certainly you recognize everything that we have learned, that we have seen, but it's just enhanced, it's just expanded. And the keywords, and I really do want to stress this because keywords are great, you know, and they're really, you get it to the point, which I think to myself, I'm curious, how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I mean, my prior book on Uranus came out in 2008, and this one came out summer of 2010, so about 2 years. But a lot of it was refining and updating from my first book that wasn't that well written. That was my first try at being an author, and I wanted to revamp a lot of that stuff. So I've been working on these ideas for about 10 years, actually. The whole charged neutral idea I came up with in 2001, and finally people are seeing that here 10 years later. So this has been a process for many years, and I've just been growing in my understanding and my body of knowledge and whatnot, and so there's that view. Just to back up on what you were saying on the Gemini Sag and the keywords, is that I do want to stress, I do have a lot of keywords in there, but I also give the disclaimer that vocabulary isn't written in stone. I mean, you could fit the entire dictionary into the astrology system. So there's only a few words there in the grand scheme of things. And I tell the reader, like, this is just getting you to the ballpark. If you have a different word that works for you, go ahead and substitute that. I'm not dogmatic around what the keywords are. I just want to get the essence or flavor for that. And I think I've accomplished that. And if people like a different word, they say, oh, you know, this interchange, Aries, Cancer, feels more like this. Well, go ahead and use that word. But I think it's instructive to kind of get us in that arena.
I think it's an excellent, and what I really think is, and I'm thinking of people who are really learning astrology, the newer students, I want to say, who are learning about the elements and really have not had the experience, let's say, of reading charts or really at the point where they're going to come up with their own keywords. I think they're excellent starting points, because even if I could read something and maybe at some point I say, well, I would use a different word, the point that I see is that as I read them all, they resonate. And I'm just going to throw out this one and say Aries, Trine, Sagittarius. And when you talked about the trine and you say, you know, it concerns individual and the word is conquest, having, you know, and you'll go on, of course, having specific goals to achieve in the world. It's not just a word that's thrown out there and there's no explanation. But it certainly resonates, and that's why I will say to anyone who, if you feel, well, I'm not really, you know, that well-versed in astrology, I still recommend the book. It's very well-organized. It's very clearly written. It's easy to understand, and it really is an absolute wealth of information. And on that note, we're going to take our first break, and when I come back, I'm going to tell you how you can enter for a chance to win a free autographed copy of Elements and Evolution, The Spiritual Landscape of Astrology.
Astrology reading with Deborah Clement? Because in times of uncertainty and change, astrology is a valuable tool that can help you gain perspective and a better understanding of your situation. You've heard how much information she gives during her on-the-spot readings. Imagine how much more she can share when she's studied your chart beforehand. Your horoscope is a precious resource that contains abundant insight into all areas of your life and offers guidance about your future, but you can't benefit from it unless you're aware of it. Let Deborah's astrological expertise reveal what you need to know about your talents, challenges, relationships, life purpose, and the cycles that'll be affecting your future. Contact her today at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, at anchoredinastrology.com to schedule your reading and start reaping the rewards that your horoscope offers.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? the show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Relationships, career, or overall concerns for the future, an astrological reading with Deborah Clement will raise your awareness and shed light into areas of your life that have great potential but are now lying unfulfilled. By exploring your horoscope with Deborah, she can help you build upon your strengths, overcome challenges, and expand your talents. Deborah offers readings by telephone as well as in person, and all readings are recorded on a CD and provided to you at no extra charge, not even postage. For more information or to schedule a reading, you can email Deborah at debra@anchoredinastrology.com, or better yet, pick up the phone and call her directly at 516-319-5639. That's 516-319-5639. Your personal horoscope offers insight and guidance into your life. Only you can make the decision to benefit from it. Do it today and enrich your life.
Welcome back. You're listening to Anchored in Astrology. I'm your host, Deborah Clement, and my guest today is Eric Myers, and we are offering, really, Eric is offering, to give away a free autographed copy of his book, Elements in Evolution, The Spiritual Landscape of Astrology. So if you'd like to enter for a chance to win this book, what you need to do is to send an email, okay, with the word groundbreaking in the subject line. And by the way, I chose that word, not Eric. I don't want, you know, so I chose the word because it really is groundbreaking in the subject line. And you're sending it to Eric, E-R-I-C, at soulvisionconsulting.com, soulvisionconsulting.com. Include your name, that would be nice. And please have it to Eric by 11:59 p.m. on Saturday, April 2nd. So for those of you who are listening to this via podcast, and in case by now it's, you know, like March 30th, you still have time to enter, and Eric will be announcing the winner and contacting the winner. So good luck to everyone. But in the meantime, please go to his website, and you may want to just order the book now. It's a great book, really, and I hope to get it done in the next week, but I'm going to put a review up there for you because I think it's absolutely great. The charged and neutral element, Eric, because we just touched upon that, and that is an important part of your book. And so can I ask you just to explain that a little bit for my listeners?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the way that the elements are usually organized is you have the yin and the yang, the yin being earth and water and the yang being air and fire. And then I looked at this and I said, well, how else can we organize? Instead of just up and down, yin and yang, why not left and right? And so the way that I see it is that they go with left and right brain. You have the neutral would be more left brain. And so you have earth and air are categorized as the neutral elements. And then water and fire are more right brain and they would be called charged. And so what this means is that we see this dichotomy everywhere. You have content, and then you have the process. You have structure, which is left brain, and then you have essence, which is right brain. I mean, even when you watch the Olympics, you see technical merit, which is the left brain, and then artistic presentation, which is the right brain. Even if you watch Star Trek, you'll see Spock, which is left brain, analytical, and then you have Bones, McCoy, who's always excitable and always about process and is very, expressive, and he's more charged. And so, I mean, basically the idea is that earth is the structure of the physical and air is the structure of the metaphysical, just like astrology or mathematics. 2 + 2 = 4. There's nothing charged about that. We just have this intellectual structure. And then process, the charged elements, water and fire, go in levels of intensity. Like, think of your emotion. I feel a little bit angry or a lot of anger. Or with fire, you know, this is my opinion. I have a strong, passionate opinion about something, is with fire, is our philosophical, you know, fire. And there's many more things to do with fire as well. But the basic idea is that the elements function very differently if they're charged or neutral. And this isn't part of astrology at all. And the reason why it isn't is because this is from a transpersonal level. When we're just kind of looking down from the bird's eye view, when we interact with everything, we charge everything. You know, you might have passionate feelings about your bank account number with your balance. But in and of itself, you know, having whatever it is, say $4,000 in your bank account, that's just a structure or just a fact. It's just how many, you know, rocks are in your pile. And so that's not loaded unless you bring your own emotional charge to it. And that's what I think we've done, is that we've charged everything and we become egoically kind of preoccupied with the neutral elements. And therefore, we've been unable to see their neutrality because we're distorting it. So I bring us to that view, you know, from the more the transpersonal lens.
You also have, and I want to just mention this because you do have other books, you know, as well. And in one of them, you have a new view also of the sun and moon, which is really less about gender, right, and more about awakening. And you certainly discuss that in this book as well.
Yeah. And once again, it's the same idea. It's not that it's replacing the gender orientation. It's just saying there could be another layer to the onion that isn't so rooted in our experience as male or female. And my view is at the spiritual level, souls are not identified with one gender or another. They're more universal than that. And then when we choose to incarnate, of course, we enter the realm of separation, of duality, and we occupy one or the other gender. And so my view is saying it's not to replace that, but to say, okay, we can look at it from another view that isn't so focused on that. And so they're both relevant. None of my work is saying that the ego level is invalid. It's saying is that there's another layer to the onion.
And, you know, we've been focusing so much on the book, and, of course, you know, you being this author of this book, but I want to mention that, you know, Eric is a consulting astrologer, so visit his website at soulvisionconsulting.com, and you can also learn about the services that he offers as well in terms of personal consultations. So, Eric, we were talking before we'd gotten on the air and about Mercury, and I'd love to discuss that and have you share that with my listeners.
Yeah. This is what I'm writing about now. I'm writing a book called Transpersonal Astrology, and just really giving wider, voice here to what I did in the article in the Mount Astrologer of looking at things and from this other viewpoint, you know, bringing to the entire system, not just the sun and moon. And what has occurred to me is if you think about the mythology of Mercury, amongst other things, he's called the thief or the trickster. And Mercury is involved with dualistic thinking. And if you look at the planet up there in the sky, you would obviously need, you know, a telescope. You can see it. But to understand the idea that half the planet is really hot, and, you know, and then the side facing the sun, and then the other half is really cold. And so you really get the sense of almost black and white thinking, this dualistic thinking with Mercury. This is good, this is bad, this is male, this is female, this is preferred, this is not preferred. And so my view is that Mercury has taken over astrology, that astrology is Uranian, which is transpersonal. It's beyond egoic preferences. But the way that we understand astrology is so influenced by this dualistic thinking, that my view that there's been an egoic takeover of viewing astrology from a dualistic lens. And that says more about us than the nature of astrology, which in my view is a metaphysical organization, Uranian, that doesn't say this is good or this is bad or this is dualistic. In fact, it wants us to bridge things and come into unity consciousness, is what happens when we get to the transpersonal planets. So my overarching kind of campaign or the point is, how can we bring a Uranian view to all of astrology rather than just view it dualistically from the Mercury lens? And so my little kind of joking around is that there's been a thievery, that Mercury has stolen astrology and has brought it to this level. And my view is, are we going to now address that, or are we going to be accomplices with the thief and just only view the system dualistically, or can we also view it transpersonally?
You know, back in about 1990, I was in Manhattan. There was an astrologer there, Pat Maramondo. She wrote a book, The Neptune Effect. She recently passed a few months ago, and I took a few lessons with her, and I had studied with her. And I'll never forget her saying to me at the time, the academics, that's how she referred to them, and she said, just wishes the academics are going to take over astrology. And I didn't really get what she meant at the time, to be quite frank with you. And as the years went on, though, I did understand her point. And that's why when we had this discussion about Mercury being the thief, it really resonated. And I thought, boy, did she? Because I agree. I agree with you 100%. One of the things I'm hoping, as I said, Uranus and Aries being looking at it as the initiation. I'm hoping to see this rebirth of astrology as I view it, which is really it's a metaphysical art to me. That's how I view astrology, and that's how I work with astrology. So I certainly share that opinion. I don't know if everyone else will embrace it, but I certainly share it with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's not saying that the personal stuff is invalid, but it's saying that there's a broader transpersonal level as well. In fact, I think that if you take the more dualistic approach to its logical conclusion, you might find that instead of promoting spiritual growth, it's just reinforcing our egoic preferences, which keeps us in a state of not growing, because we only want things that are going to feel nice to our ego. I mean, one of the easy ways to see this is just the way that we look at maybe even Jupiter and Saturn. Jupiter being good, Saturn being bad. Well, you know, if you take that to the conclusion and you want to not do Saturn in your chart or do it well or do it consciously, then you never grow. Saturn is the maturation principle. We have to embrace Saturn if we want to grow. It's indispensable for our spiritual growth. And Jupiter, on the other side, has a dark side. And if all we're doing is bolstering, things that are easy or reward, then that does keep us in a state of regression. And so my view is that the transpersonal view says, okay, get over the what feels good or not to the personality. What does the soul want to learn and accomplish? And so there is a sense of maturation, in my view, about moving to the transpersonal view. And that's, invites people maybe beyond their edges in some way. I don't know. Everyone has a different relationship with this. But I think ultimately that's where growth is taking us.
And with the soul growth, at least I know from my work, when you look at, in my clients, you see the hard, I'm going to call them the squares, the hard aspects, and even in synastry between people. And, I've said this many times, I've seen charts of between, people, that you would look at them and you say, oh my God, these people, they're just going to so hit it off, or they're going to hook up, or whatever. This was years ago, I used to think that. And then it didn't happen. And then you see people together for years, very hard energy between them. And what, of course, I've come to learn is what has the soul come here to learn? Because that's what it's about. And those are the people. And sometimes it takes the hard energy that's very defining to really to push us forward, to propel us, because we're dissatisfied with something, and that's where our growth really comes from. The Jupiter, too much Jupiter, and, you're sitting on the couch, and you just don't get off of it. Saturn, being a Capricorn, I've always felt that Saturn's gotten quite a bit of a bum rap. But Saturn's very much about definition. And that's really how I view it. Sometimes it can be limiting. It can be, hindering. But Saturn is really very much to me about defining things, trimming the fat and really defining things. What is it? So, I do, it'll be interesting to see what the general response to it is, but I do agree with you very strongly about Mercury, and I do hope to see astrology come back to more of the metaphysical.
Yeah, and to tie this into the whole idea of spiritual awakening, which is the focus of my work, is that, in my view, when we have a contracted view, or we're shielding ourselves because we only want to pursue happiness or survival and take care of ourselves, then that's the egoic kind of stance that we could take in life. And for me, that's aligned with the moon. The moon is more or less our smaller self. And then the sun is more of our higher self or bigger self, is my view on it. The sun contains roughly 64 million moons can fit inside the sun. It's much, much bigger and broader. And to me, the moon is more analogous to our humanness, and the sun is analogous to spirit and our soul and our growth and our expansion. And so if you think about the contraction into this much, much smaller moon, that's how we take care of ourselves and see to our survival, and that's relevant. But that's not the whole story. In my view, the awakening is a broadening. You know, picture like a light body almost of someone, like an aura or whatever you want to call it, that extends out into the entire world. And to me, the sun conceivably expands our energy outward, and we re-engage with all of life rather than just our preferences for what might feel good. And so with that, that's an invitation for the transpersonal, for the expansion. And then we are open and welcome all experience. What can I learn here in this situation? I'm open to it. Show me, spirit. What's the lesson here? And then with that awakening, with that openness, we really can just cherish everything that could possibly happen. And then we learn from it. But in the more contracted personal level, which to me is the moon, then, you know, we're evaluating, ooh, do I want to let this in? You know, this might not feel good. I don't know. I'm a little bit leery of this or whatnot. And we have that personal level. And I'm saying that that's relevant, but also awakening into oneness, into everything, is also relevant, is my overarching point.
I think, and I think we discussed this also, the moon in general, I feel, is very, I'm going to say, underrated in astrology in terms of its influence, its meaning, and that's something I think there's so much emphasis sometimes put on the sun, or even just, I will say, you know, even people are very quick to look at Venus or to look at Jupiter, but the moon, the emotions, and it's really very much, I think, you know, at our core, and I've always said to people, you know, if they read even just a basic sun sign book, and I'll say take Linda Goodman's book, you know, read about the sun in, you know, the sun in Gemini. But if you've got a moon in Scorpio, read about the Scorpio sun sign. And I really find that most of the time people actually relate more strongly to what they're reading about their sun sign, their moon sign, excuse me, than they do to their sun sign.
Yeah. Well, there's a few issues here. And one I would extend it to be far broader than just the sign. I mean, I call it the whole moon profile of the aspects it's making, the house it's in, the sign, everything about it. And my view here is, and again, I'm bringing in something new here, but it is totally consonant with science and the astronomy that's happening, is that the Earth and the moon is like a binary system. We are enveloped in this dance with the moon, that our energies are so close, and that it's almost like one system, you know, that's going on, the Earth-Moon energetic system. And my view is that we come in to any lifetime based on our moon situation and our evolutionary journey, past life, and we re-engage with the egoic, unfinished nature in our soul. That's the moon, and we're fused to that energetically as the moon and the Earth are in that dance. And then all of it is revolving around the sun, which is in the center of the system, which sustains everything, and that's much broader. And we're awakening into that much more expansive radiance of the sun. So my view is that we are always going to identify with our moon situation, because that's the way our soul feels. And then the sun is a process of becoming. And the one way to really see this is we're always going to identify with our sun, because that's our energy. You know, spirit has put us into the situation where we're going to embody the energy that we're becoming. But the question is, are you really doing the high end, the most conscious version of your sun? And again, not just sign, but the whole sun profile. And my view is that almost everyone still has room to grow. We could still do the sun more consciously. We could do it more radiantly, more just with broader awareness. And that, to me, is the awakening process.
Well, on that note, we are going to take our second break. We will be back in just about a minute with more Anchored in Astrology and my guest, Eric Myers.
Should you have an astrology reading with Deborah Clement? Because in times of uncertainty and change, astrology is a valuable tool that can help you gain perspective and a better understanding of your situation. You've heard how much information she gives during her on-the-spot readings. Imagine how much more she can share when she's studied your chart beforehand. Your horoscope is a precious resource that contains abundant insight into all areas of your life and offers guidance about your future. But you can't benefit from it unless you're aware of it. Let Deborah's astrological expertise reveal what you need to know about your talents, challenges, relationships, life purpose, and the cycles that'll be affecting your future. Contact her today at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, at anchoredinastrology.com to schedule your reading and start reaping the rewards that your horoscope offers.
Welcome back to Anchored in Astrology. I'm Deborah Clement. My guest is Eric Myers. And I want to mention that in the next month or so, Eric is going to be making a number of appearances in the D.C. and New York area. You can get the details at his website, which is www.soulvisionconsulting.com. You'll just click the link that says Contact and Calendar. And so you can get all the details, and you could actually see Eric in person. If you buy a book, he'll autograph it for you right there. So, Eric, I was going to make one other comment about the moon and the sun, and when you're talking about it with children, you know, when we've got the kids, and I know you've got, I think, a little boy, but we've got kids, when they're growing up, very much it's the moon that we're dealing with, because children tend to grow into their sun sign.
Yeah.
And when they're young, the moon. And that's why I know the moon profile, and I like the way you put that, very, very, very interesting. I have to actually consider that when I do my view of children as well when it comes to the moon. And
yeah,
Eric,
I mean, I was going to say, it's, you know, this idea is so obvious with children, because if you think of unconsciousness and emotional reactivity with the moon and then the sun, broader awareness, more awakened mind. I mean, when you see an infant, are you seeing awareness or unconsciousness? Are you seeing easily, emotional reactivity, or are you seeing more of that awakened mind? And so my sense is that we grow in awareness and presence. The ability to be present is also a big part of the sun. And children, infants, are not really present, and we grow into that. And so that, to me, is the repetition or the analogy of the broader spiritual growth that our souls are doing, is that all of us have a infantile or less conscious or less evolved part of us that, you know, that's evolution, evolutionary astrology, is we're growing back to the broader awareness and presence of spirit.
Actually, I have a question here from the chat room we're going to ask you, and someone's asking, do you feel that as we get into old age, do we grow back into the moon at all?
Well, it's not that we grow back. We always have the moon. It's kind of like the analogy that I use is the seed to the flower, you know, and the roots. You always have your roots. You're just not as identified with it. Just like you're not as identified with the part of you that was 5 years old or when you were 5 years old. You understand that inside, and you can have memories of it, but you're not identifying anymore. So we never leave the moon. As long as you have a body and an ego and a separate self, you're in the moon. And so it's not so much that we leave and come back. It's just that we're growing from the foundation and we're less identified, but we use it consciously. You use your body, you use your ego, and you're just using it from more awareness.
Okay, thank you. And she says thank you.
Uh-huh.
No, interesting. I understand where she was coming from. But that's why I thought, let me ask this. If she's asking other people, I'm sure I'd be curious as well. So let me ask you this. Coming up, I know you've got some appearances. You're working on a new book as well. And I just want to also remind people, The Mountain Astrologer, your interview is in there, the April-May issue. And so let me ask you this. In terms of the work, and I won't say what is the best use of this book, because it's got so much, and that's why I want to stress that it's not just, you know, air, earth, fire, and water, the way we think of it. In terms of someone who is, let's say, more of a beginner in astrology, because I think it's a great book for them in terms of understanding the aspects between, you know, whether it's the squares. And the example I want to use, and I do, because I know a lot of people are interested in the quincunx, you talk about that. You have, and there's about a good page or so, by the way, devoted. And, for example, the quincunx between, let's say, Virgo and Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
And, your discussion of that. And I do think, And I'm looking at it, and I guess I'm saying for people who are beginners, I would say to them, absolutely get the book, because I think that part to begin with would be very helpful in shaping their understanding of astrology. And can
yes.
I just, yeah.
That's I was going to say, is that the book is more of a, it's less about chart application. There's no charts in this
right.
book. It isn't about that. That comes next. And I'm going to be, and this transpersonal book I'm writing is going to be, again, more philosophical. And then what I'm going to be doing after that is the grounding into chart application. But first things first, we have to understand things at the transpersonal level before we can approach charts there. And so this book is more philosophical. It's more the bird's eye view of astrology. How can we understand evolutionary growth? How can we understand what the soul is doing? So if without that broader philosophical, you know, to inform us, then we're not really sure what our lens for looking at things, you know, easily clicks back in to that dualistic paradigm. So anyway, the point I'm making is that the general, you know, course of my work will be to ground everything into charts, but this book isn't really about that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's not a chart interpretation book, I'm going to say, per se, but I do want to say I think it is an excellent, and this is the word I've been searching for, it's an excellent foundation. And that's
yeah.
what I feel. For someone, if you've already been, you know, if you've, like I say, I've been practicing astrology for so many years, and I read this, and I'm thrilled because there's such new information, I think very valid information, that I would certainly apply very quickly. But for anyone who's starting off in astrology, if you're a beginner, I wouldn't be intimidated by it. I think it's an excellent foundation. And you're working, I'm going to say, let's say, with, in general, maybe with the whole signs, you know, Virgo, Quincunx, Aquarius. But that's really very important. And so
yeah, just
terms
understand.
Of a foundation, I
mm-hmm.
think it's an excellent book, and that's why I don't want it to come across like, oh, this is, you know, you need to be an intermediate knowledge of astrology. No,
right. One
I
thing
think
I,
this will give a great foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to mention that my second book, Between Past and Present, A Spiritual View of the Moon and Sun, is all about chart application with the sun-moon idea. There's, I think, over 40 or 50 charts and analyses in that book. And that's for people who might be curious about looking at the moon and sun in this different way. And then how is that relevant for charts? That's the book. I already wrote that book. And so you can get that. But the Elements book that doesn't really have charts in it.
No, but the Elements book is well worth it. It's well worth it for
yeah.
beginners or intermediate or advanced. It truly is, and I say a groundbreaking book. So my guest has been Eric Mize. Eric, I want to thank you for joining me today on the show. I hope you will come back again.
Certainly, I'd love to anytime. This has been
and
quite a joy, and I can't believe how quick this hour went by.
I know, it goes by very, very quickly, especially when it's interesting. That makes it, believe me, a big difference. So Eric's website is www.soulvisionconsulting.com. He is a consulting astrologer. Also, enter to win a free autographed copy of his book. Send him an email, eric@soulvisionconsulting.com. Put groundbreaking in the subject line and have it to him by April 2nd at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Deborah Clement for Anchored in Astrology. Until next time, may Jupiter's blessings be your constant companion.
You have been listening to Anchored in Astrology with me, your host, Deborah Clement. If you have a question about your horoscope that you would like answered on the air, I invite you to call me during the show at 877-230-3062 or email me at Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, at anchoredinastrology.com. For information about private readings, please visit my website or call me direct at 516-319-5639.